Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Jerry Palm on bracketology in the next half hour. We have open lines at 1-800-795-9565. That's 800-795-9565. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Kessel comes forward. Passing left wing. Up for Malkin, just inside the blue line. Goes cross-rink. Open man now, and it's Kessel. Goes left side. Here's Schultz shooting and scoring! Justin Schultz gets the goal set up by Kessel, and the Penguins have won it in overtime. The kitchen is closed.
Indeed it is. Mike Lang, the great one. On the Penguins radio network. All right. Their play-by-play call of the day. Let's get to a couple of quick things here now. Let's see. Jerry Palm, we'll talk about bracketology. Kim Jones on the show on Friday. In fact, it's almost an all-Jones show on Friday. Matter of fact. Nathan Davis on Thursday. Bucknell plays Colgate tomorrow night for the automatic bid. Steelers have franchised Le'Veon Bell again, but that doesn't mean they stopped negotiating because they haven't. And Sammy Watkins, by the way, was not franchised by the Rams. Notre Dame leads Pitt 42-34, under 12 timeout, second half. Let's see. BC beat Georgia Tech 87-77. Wright State, Cleveland State tonight. LIU and Wagner tonight. Northeastern and College of Charleston tonight. Wake Forest and Syracuse tonight. BYU, Gonzaga for the West Coast Conference Championship tonight. South Dakota State for the Summit Championship tonight. Steve Kerr, Golden State Warriors head coach, said players who leave college early for the NBA draft and go unpicked should be allowed to return to the NCAA to go to school. And you know what? I'm for that. That's fine. I think I'm completely for that. At some point, you have to make a decision on this. And the decision is going to have to be, you need to give student athletes more leeway, but you can't pay them. And don't listen to all this mumbo jumbo about they're making all this money off their backs. And look what the coaches get paid and so forth. Look, a lot of pressure on coaches to keep winning, especially at high-profile programs, because the James Franklins, the Nick Sabans, the Urban Meyers, the Mike Krzyzewskis, the John Beilines, Tom Izzo, there's a pressure on them to keep winning. Because success breeds success, and usually success also means the money flow continues, because the money flow needs to continue because you have so many sports you have to support. Again, I keep coming back to that, but it is just a fact of life and a reality. Right? Penn State is spending everything it brings in. Doing contributions, radio network, TV contracts, ticket sales, you know, corporate partners, things like that. Penn State's spending everything it gets. So cost of attendance is a big plus. So at least it's putting some money into the pockets. Now, not every athlete qualifies for a Pell Grant. I'll give you an example. Josh Rosen at UCLA, I can guarantee you in no uncertain terms, he didn't get a Pell Grant. He comes from money. But there are other players that do. And Pell Grants are worth thousands of dollars. And now, the change in rules years ago is that it no longer counts against your scholarship. Big plus. So, in other words, they get to keep that if they happen to be from a family with need. Right? That's never talked about, never discussed. As soon as I don't hear that mentioned, that tells me right away that whomever's talking about the topic doesn't have a grasp or a handle on it. You know, and we talk about everything else. I mean, let's face it. I mean, how would you, if Dwight Gault were a free agent after watching the combine, how much money would the services of a Dwight Gault and his staff be worth to a student athlete? Yet at Penn State, that's their guy. They don't have to pay for him at all. But you also have to create more leeway within the system. I think it would be smart to do that. So how do you create the leeway within the system? We've talked many times here about the ability of said student athlete to use their likeness. Their likeness can be on a poster. Their likeness can be maybe they're in a TV commercial for a car dealership. Maybe they can be used, you know, or can be at an autograph show. All right. Now that brings the next step. The next step is, do you allow basketball and football players to be in the same category as hockey and baseball players and let them have agents? You really should have somebody that can manage what I just talked about. Now, right now, let's take, for example, Tony Carr. If Tony Carr puts his name into the NBA draft and does not employ an agent, it then gives him the option of pulling his name out of the draft. Once a student athlete commits to having an agent today in football or basketball, that's it, you're done. I say it wouldn't, I'm not, obviously we know the problems that some agents can cause, I've got that. But you've got to start realizing that there is a reality out there. And ideology and reality don't always meet up. In fact, normally ideology and reality don't have a point where they meet. So while in terms of ideology, I don't want to see agents involved, I'm going to be realistic that, look, if you're going to allow student athletes to have the opportunity to have their likeness used and get money for it, whether it's in an escrow account or whether it's just a direct payment, you need somebody to manage that. And maybe that opens the door for you to have an agent like a college hockey player does or a college baseball player can have. Now, how do you manage that? That's a different story. You have to talk about, obviously, the unintended consequences. That has to be discussed. But it's something that is worthy of discussion, which then brings me to the Steve Kerr proposal, which I'm perfectly fine with. If you go into a draft, football or basketball, and you are not drafted, the NCAA should let that player be able to come back. Now, it gets a little tricky. The NBA, the basketball part's a little bit easier than the football part to manage that. And here's why. In basketball, if a player right now doesn't get an agent and goes through the process, most recruiting is already done. in basketball. The vast majority of players, not all, but the vast majority do sign during the early signing period. But the early signing period, remember, is before the season begins. And we're talking about underclassmen going to the draft, so you're already figuring in the possibility that Johnny Jones might be coming back next season. Well, it turns out Johnny turns out a spectacular sophomore season and or a spectacular freshman season to the point where, hey, look, he, you know, Johnny is going to be a first-round NBA pick. Right? Now, there is a late signing period, but you can leave that door open. Football is a little more difficult because the early signing period is after the season is over with. So that's a little trickier as to how it plays out. But if they don't get drafted, allow them to go back if they just so desire. They get to go back and maybe finish their degree. They get to go back and get to play again because they haven't exhausted all their eligibility. So why not? Why not allow that to happen? Which then brings up the possibility of an 18-year-old. This is where I draw the line, though. If the NBA drops one and done, and look, why does the NBA want one and done? Okay, there's a couple of reasons. Obviously, anything you can do to create a more mature league you want, that's obvious. But think about this. Okay, before David Stern got what he perceived as a big victory of getting 1 year out of high school and 19 years of age put in, is because it then kept NBA scouts from having to scatter all over the country and watch high school games. Just on pure efficiency. It was what the NBA was hoping for. They didn't want to be running around to watch this high school game and that high school game and things like that, or go to AAU camps. It's so much easier to say, hey, look, Wendell Carter and Marvin Bagley are both playing for Duke. They're taking on North Carolina with Joel Berry. I get to watch how many prospects at once on the floor in that environment. And that is one of the reasons they did it. Now, the NBA does have satellite camps set up in Europe, 3 in China, 1 in Australia, 1 in Senegal, believe it or not, and they just opened up 1 in Mexico City, but they don't have any in the United States, which is something they're looking into. And that's where they've got to make a decision as to what they want to do. Now, supposedly they're getting closer and closer because both Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts, and Michelle Roberts is the head of the NBA Players Association, have both sat down with Condoleezza Rice's committee. Saying they testified is not, that's not the right word. They sat down and they talked with them. Because they've got to be able to come to something that's good for the sport and at least deliver their opinions. Because remember, for every LeBron James, Kevin Garnett, and Kobe Bryant, there are also those along the way that have attempted to do this and washed out before they changed the rule. So now, do you let them go back to school if they don't get picked? I say yes. Why not? Does it create a little bit of a problem in terms of where you are scholarship-wise? They can. It can. But, again, you're trying to do something without paying the athlete. Because, look, they're already getting a lot with that scholarship to begin with. Not a little bit. They've got a lot. Okay? A lot. From tuition to books, Look, I've gone through the litany of all this with all of you. You know where I'm coming from with this. And that include, you know, and coming back to all of this includes, you know, how much does a trainer cost? You know, massage, cold tub, running a hot tub, you know, strength training, speed training, okay? Weight training, individual coaching. I mean, you know, you go through the long list of things, it starts to add up as to what you're doing. Where if the individual athlete had to pay for all of this, it'd be very difficult for them to do that. Very difficult. So, but you also have to do this where you've got to create more leeway somewhere. And these are at least points of discussion in creating leeway that opens the door. Look, the percentage of those who would be in the position to have their likeness used for payment is very, very small. Okay, very, very small. But you still want to be able to give that opportunity to see if they can. It's their likeness. Because there's another part that's also not talked about here. We can talk about, when you hear the expression, they've earned all this money off of their backs. Well, there's no question that the student athlete provides great moments, great entertainment, great pride. I mean, all of that. But when Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter both leave Duke, how far down are season tickets going to go? None. Okay. Saquon Barkley is moving on to the NFL. How far down are season tickets going to go for Penn State? Ezekiel Elliott left. Attendance slightly increased at Ohio State. My point is, in college, the brand has deep-seated meaning. Because of the deep-seated loyalty at Penn State, for example, after the NCAA came in and did what they did, this place survived because of the loyalty to the brand that the fan has. The name on the front of the jersey brings the fan in to begin with because of a deep-seated loyalty, whether they happen to go to the school or they've just been a fan all these years. Because players come and go and the turnover's happening all the time. Somebody said to me, look at Ohio State, you know, they've been able to, they haven't been using one-and-dones to get it done. Ohio State was using one-and-dones almost every year for about 7 or 8 years. And you just have to follow closely to understand that. But fans kept coming back because, you know, when Greg Oden and Mike Conley and Deshaun Cook left, other people came in, the fans are still there. See, college is a little bit different because of the brand name loyalty. Now, you have to keep, obviously, the quote, product on the field at a high level, the product on the court at a high level to keep attracting that fan. But you already start out with, in college, a base of brand loyalty where you're not just building your, quote, brand on the back of student athletes. When the NCAA tournament rolls around, you're going to have a lot of people in offices filling out brackets that have no idea Marvin Bagley plays for Duke. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. Nada. Dude, they're going to look at it and go, hey, look at Duke. They won 27 games. They're still good. Hey, great. I'm going to pick Duke. Right? You ever hear this stuff talked about? All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Charles Davis, Fox Sports tomorrow. Nathan Davis, Bucknell basketball coach Thursday. Kim Jones, NFL Network Friday. Very pleased to be joined by Jerry Palm of CBS Sports. Jerry, I apologize. You had so many people around you at Madison Square Garden that when I saw you, I thought, I'm going to go over and at least say hi to you. And there's too many people around you because everybody wanted to hear the info.
Oh, sorry about that. It would have been nice to meet you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've met before along the way, but I mean, we've crossed paths. I remember, I think we met at Indiana once, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, so let's get this one out of the way first. You don't have Penn State in the field, and I don't think you have them close, do you?
No, not especially. I mean, 3 wins over Ohio State are nice, but everything else is sufficiently negative that's not enough to make up for it.
All right, so let's now go to the top of this. When this week shakes out, who do you think the number one seeds will be?
Well, Virginia is a lock for the overall number one. And then you've got Villanova should be a number one, even if they lose in the Big East tournament. And then you've got 3 teams for 2 spots, Xavier, Kansas, and Duke. If all 3 win their conference tournaments, Duke could be the odd man out. But if Xavier or Kansas were to lose and Duke wins the ACC tournament, I think they could move past one of those teams.
All right, so simple as that. Now let's go to the other end of it. Okay, which teams, without winning their conference, because that's an automatic bid, which schools do you think have an opportunity to help themselves if they can cobble together a couple of conference tournament wins?
Well, Louisville, Syracuse, Texas, Marquette, you know, all of those teams play in leagues where they have opportunities to get higher quality wins. In Louisville's case, you know, maybe even right away because they'll play Florida State the first game, and that's a likely tournament team. And you get chances, you know, early on in your conference tournament to pick up the kind of wins that can sort of separate you from the bottom of the bracket. Whereas, you know, I've got like 4 Pac-12 teams down around there. And unless they play one of the Arizona schools, they're not doing much to build their resume, and it's hard for them to just push their way up on their own.
What should it tell everybody that USC is so far down in the bracket, yet a number 2 seed in their conference tournament?
I guess it tells you that conference standings don't mean anything. Nebraska found that out, or is going to find that out. It shows you that league in particular. The tournament prospects of the teams and the standings match worse than any other league. They have Arizona State's probably the number 2 tournament prospect team, and I think they finished 9th in the league because they were so good. They were one of the dominant teams in college basketball for the first 2 months, built up this nice big cushion, and it just eroded as they went through conference play. And now, you know, I guess they're actually on the bubble. If they lose their first game, there are probably scenarios where they would even get left out, although I kind of doubt it. But it's they're kind of like Oklahoma without a player like Trey Young to focus that focuses the attention on Oklahoma.
Could Dayton be greeting Trey Young?
Sure. Oh, yeah. No question. Especially if they lose to Oklahoma State. That's a distinct possibility that Oklahoma could find themselves in Dayton. I don't think they'll miss the tournament entirely. They could get their bid stolen. But they could definitely be in Dayton.
All right, St. Mary's. No offense, but in the last 5 years, every time I've watched St. Mary's, and it's always been on TV. I mean, the only St. Mary's game
I
ever did.
I'm not a St. Mary's grad.
I'm saying that I've never been impressed. Every time I watch them, I'm not impressed. Did they do damage by losing last night, or were they already securely in the field?
Well, I don't know about secure. I mean, their resume is pretty thin. There's no question about that. They won at Gonzaga, swept BYU in the regular season, lose to them in the conference tournament, lose to Gonzaga at home. But their other losses are Georgia and Washington State, 2 bottom feeders in major conferences. They lost to San Francisco in their league. That was a 4th place team, I think. So it's a pretty thin resume. I think they'll get in because I as thin as it is, I like it better than say Middle Tennessee's. So I think they'll get in, but I don't think they're going to like their seed, and I wouldn't be surprised if they showed up at Dayton.
What's more difficult for you, projecting who's in the field or where they're going to be seated?
Seating, because I don't think the committee spends as much time on it as they do selection. They consider selection more important because they always say you can play your way out of a bad seat, but you can't play your way out of not getting picked. So I think seating is harder. There appears to be less really good sort of statistical indicators when it comes to seating.
What is it about the Big 12 that is allowed out of 10 schools, maybe 9, to potentially be picked?
I don't think all 9 will get picked. I think at some point, they start playing
each
other.
That's why I use the word potentially.
Yeah, I would be surprised if it was more than 7. But, they do, I guess, still have 9 teams with some semblance of a chance, although I think that Baylor and Oklahoma State's chances are really pretty slim. Yeah. They did well outside the league. I mean, that's how you do it. You do well outside the league, and then, everybody's got good rankings because of very good non-conference performance, and then that carries through when you're beating each other up in conference play, the losses don't hurt as much.
How much of what you do is based on trying to think like the committee? How much of this is done based on your own personal metrics?
Oh, no, all of it. It's trying to think like the committee, trying to use the data that they use, trying to see it the way they see it, trying to predict what they're going to do. My own personal thoughts, feelings, whatever, metrics, biases are not useful in terms of trying to predict what they're going to do.
All right, so let's flip it the other way. In private, do you put together your own bracket as to what you think it should be just for your own sanity?
I haven't got time for it.
No time.
I have, every once in a while, my own thoughts about, if I was on the committee, I would probably vote a certain way, or I would care about some factors more than others, but I don't really devote much time to putting together my own personal 1-68.
Jerry, what's tougher for you, football or basketball?
Basketball, because there's so many more teams. Football, you're only really picking 4 teams, and there's maybe 5 or 6 to choose from to pick those 4. The bowls, other bowls, once you get outside the merit-based bowls, because it's so random, it's, at times it's based on things that are not at all merit, really. That's hard, but... just in terms of trying to pick a playoff, the basketball bracket's a lot harder.
Well, you and I just watched Michigan in person and what they were able to do. How much did they help themselves over 4 days at Madison Square Garden?
Well, they really helped themselves really just even the last 2 days, beating Michigan State and Purdue. That's their 2 best wins of the year. Well, the road win at Michigan State would probably be better, but neutral court win Michigan State, neutral court Purdue, that's 2 of their 3 best wins of the year. That helps a lot. Their resume includes a few losses to teams that are not going to be in the tournament, including, at Nebraska, where they beat them pretty soundly. But it's still a pretty strong resume, and they moved up, I think, 2 or 3 lines on my bracket over the course of those 4 days.
All right, you brought up Nebraska a couple times in this. In the end, when they win, 13 Big Ten games or something
like
that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 13 and 5. All right, so explain to everybody why a 13-5 conference record, and you and I both know conference records are not figured into what the NCAA selection committee does.
But right.
That's still your last 18 games, your last 16 games of the season were all within that grouping of teams. What kept them out?
The fact that those teams weren't very good this year. The league was down. I mean, normally if you go 13-5 in the Big Ten, you're picking up half a dozen quality wins. This year they went 13-5 in the Big Ten and got 1 win over a team that's going to the NCAA tournament out of 13. That's why 13-5 in the Big Ten didn't mean anything this year. And then they didn't do anything out of conference to make up for it. They played a poor non-conference schedule. The good teams they did play beat them. At some point you've got to prove that you can beat tournament quality opposition. And Nebraska just failed to do that.
And that brings up an interesting point because conferences have expanded, not every conference schedule is the same.
Correct.
You can play a weak conference schedule because of how it played out. And you and I both know, Jerry, that based on the home and aways they had and some of the locations of the one plays, they didn't play. They played maybe the weakest conference schedule of anybody in the Big Ten.
Probably. Certainly. I mean, yeah, the one play on the road for Michigan State, Ohio State, and Purdue lost all three. One play, Michigan at home, won that game pretty convincingly. And but that's, you know, that's it. I mean, you can't, you know, if the league was better, I think it's reasonable to assume that Nebraska would not have been 13-5.
Right. I agree completely with that along the way. You've seen a lot of games in person. And I was impressed the fact that you were at the Garden, you're around people. I know Bruce Rasmussen was there as well. What, you know, what are you looking for when you go to a game?
I want to see I'm looking for, I guess, consistency of effort. You know, meaning, you know, if the game, if you get down, are you fighting to stay in it, or, you know, do you just kind of roll over and give up? Or at what point do you do roll over and give up? You know, how much fight is in a team? How much effort do you play with? I look for good defense because I think defense wins championships ultimately. I mean, you can be a great offensive team, but if you can't get stops, you're going to have a hard time. And, you know, I look for, you know, how well a team executes what they're trying to do. You know, you can run a play and run it really well and miss a shot. I still like seeing that you ran the play really well. You got the shot even if you didn't hit it.
They're going to reveal all 68 teams first, and then they'll start telling you what the brackets look like. Do you like that idea?
No, not really, but whatever. It's I guess I'm a traditionalist. I just want to see a bracket. I don't really need to see a list of teams. That doesn't help me much.
All right. What does Jerry Palm do at 10 o'clock on Sunday night?
Probably television or radio.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. After all this stuff is done and projections are done, do you get a chance to rest a little bit?
Well, I'll go to the tournament. I'll be actually somewhere each weekend of the tournament. So, no, not a whole lot of rest until you actually get to around April. I mean, it's easier than the last 2 weeks are. I mean, I will get to be able to sleep at night, but it doesn't really end until the tournament ends.
Jerry, what got you into this?
Well, I'm a basketball fan. 1994, saw the RPI formula change, saw an article about it, had a computer and too much time on my hands, and decided to try and replicate it to see if I could, you know, figure out what it was, and shared what I knew on news groups, which is, you know, the primitive caveman writing on the wall version of message boards. And some people were interested. I really didn't think anybody would be, but it developed a little bit of a following. And then somebody who covers Penn State, actually, Dave Jones at the Harrisburg paper, was the first media person to find me. And he started talking to me. He liked me. He tells two friends, they tell two friends. Within almost no time at all, everybody who covered college basketball seemed to know who I was. And I really didn't do anything except share what I knew.
Yeah. Now the RPI is obviously still figured into this somewhere. Some have said it is antiquated. What is your opinion of RPI? Is it still, in your opinion, a useful metric?
Yes, but I understand why people feel that way, because they've seen things like Sagarin and KenPom and stuff like that are more sophisticated, even though they don't really know what goes into it. But it's so I understand that feeling. It's useful because you can explain it, and it's helping the committee aggregate teams. They're not using it ever in a decisive fashion. They don't use any metric decisively. But so they're not saying, well, you're 35th in the RPI, this other team is 50, we're taking 35. I mean, that's never a thing. But it is a pretty good reflection on the kind of year that you've had. And I think that that's, you know, really what they're looking for from a metric.
If a coach were to call you up and say, give me a little bit of advice on non-conference scheduling, what would your advice be?
Play the best teams you can beat.
Simple enough.
Play the best teams you can beat. I mean, you know, if you're rebuilding and you don't think you have a tournament team, then go play a bad schedule, because nobody, your RPI doesn't matter. Just go win all the games you can. if you're you know, if you're Penn State, you think you've got a team that might be an NCAA tournament team, go out and play other potential NCAA tournament teams. You don't have to play a dozen of them, but you've got to play. You've got to play some teams that, that show the committee that you're serious about it, that you you think you can play at this level, and you've got to win those games to show that you can play at that level. But you got to have them on your schedule first.
Does the expansion next year from 18 to 20 games in the ACC and 18 to 20 games in the Big Ten, obviously conference is going to be up or down, but does playing more conference games, because they're more Power 5 games, does that help?
Your ratings? No, it hurts. Because a lot of your rankings, your team's overall records are built in non-conference. Every conference game is a win and a loss for somebody in the league. Right. But the non-conference games is where, you know, that's where you really sort of prove yourself. So for most of these teams, you're taking two wins off the schedule and replacing them with a win and a loss. That's negative. In any rating system you use, that'll be a negative.
If the committee were to pull you inside and say, what metrics should we trust, what would you tell them?
You know, it's funny because a little over a year ago, we had such a meeting with the NCAA in Indianapolis as they were starting to review what kind of metrics to use. And honestly, my question, I threw it right back at them. I said, well, what are you trying to measure? What is it you're hoping to measure? You know, are you trying to measure margin of victory? Are you trying to measure dominance of play? Are you trying to measure results? What are you trying to measure? You have to answer that question first before you can start thinking about what metric to use or how to build your own.
And when you asked them that, what was their response?
They didn't really have one. I don't know that they totally thought it through, other than, I mean, they did say they want something that's results-based. They want to reward teams for good results as opposed to trying to predict who's going to win future games. There's like two schools of thoughts on metrics. One is results-based, where you're looking back at what you've done and measuring what you've done, and another is predictive, which is really more forward-looking. Obviously, it's based on what you've done. It's at a different level, but you're trying to predict winners and point spreads and things like that, and Pomeroy and Sagarin are that kind of metric, and those are heavily influenced by margin of victory because that's what you're trying to predict. And in fact, they don't even consider whether or not your one-loss record doesn't even matter because they're not trying to predict that. They're trying to predict margins. And then results-based ones tend to be more based on your record and your strength of schedule and things like that. And they were leaning that way. They want to reward teams based on results.
Well, you don't just do good work. You do great work. And I know I've appreciated it for years. And I appreciate the fact that you gave us a little bit of time today, especially in Selection Week, to talk about some of these items. Very much, Jerry, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports. And like I said, I knew what I do when I talked about the Penn State part. It was going to be, you know, bang, bang, and gone. Because I knew how Jerry felt about it going in and what his metrics were telling him and selection and so forth. I understood that. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, great to have you with us. Snowing here in State College, by the way. It's coming down at a pretty good clip right now. It's great to be in March, isn't it? I wanted to... I had an invitation this week to go to Florida, to Orlando, with Paul Keels, the Ohio State play-by-play guy, Don Fisher, Indiana, Gary Dolphin, Iowa. And they wanted to know if I would go down and play golf with them. And the reason I said no was, and I've only been home, what, 4 weekends since Christmas. So, look, I should be home. Well, I'm going to text Keels tonight, and I'm going to tell him it's snowing here in State College, and, you know, maybe I made a mistake. So, oh, great. Dick is going down to, this is just great.
Oh, Girardi's going.
Oh, no, he's not going to play golf. No, 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 it's worse than that. Much worse. Okay? Much, much worse. All right. Okay? He's going down, John Gallagher, whom we refer to as Johnny Gal, head coach at Hartford, just got a 3-year contract extension, is playing in the semifinals against UMBC. Dick had promised Johnny that he'd go to the game since it's in Baltimore. I get a text just now. UMBC just opened a new gym last month. As of 7:30, you have fallen one gym farther behind. I'm at 142 and holding.
Oh, the hill got tougher to climb. Not right. Not fair. On all levels. All levels.
Exactly. The issues I have to deal with are just unlike anybody else. Oh, at least we could have. We always have fun. We always do.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.